Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. As the weather warms, we spend more and more time outdoors, and those of us who live on the Cape Coast and Islands are very familiar with the health risks associated with ticks. Today, we talk about what ticks carry what risks and also best practices to limit exposure to tick bites. With us is Larry Dapsis, entomologist and tick project coordinator at Cape Cod Cooperative Extension. Good morning.
Morning, Mindy.
And Dick Johnson is Dukes County Tick Program Biologist. Good morning, Dick.
Good morning.
So I guess we should start. We have the dog ticks, the black-legged ticks, also known as the deer ticks, and the lone star tick. All three look different. I guess the dog tick is the least of our worries, but they can carry
I tell people they're more of an annoyance than a public health threat. Even though they can vector the pathogens that cause Rocky Mountain spotted fever and tularemia, In the dog tick samples that were analyzed last year from the Cape, there was no detectable presence of either of those pathogens. But I am mindful to tell people that 3 years ago we did have one case of Rocky Mountain spotted fever, a 10-year-old girl in Brewster who was successfully diagnosed and treated. So the pathogen is out there, but at extremely low level.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah,
slightly different situation on the vineyard, actually. A lot of the dog, a surprising percentage of the dog ticks there do carry tularemia, but it doesn't seem to be getting transmitted to humans for whatever reason. Yeah. We do see some tick bite tularemia, but we think it's from lone star ticks, not the dog tick.
Right. So let's talk next about the black-legged tick, or what everybody calls the deer tick. Mm-hmm. This one's been a concern for us. This one, you know, the big concern, Lyme disease, but they also carry... babesiosis.
Oh, yeah. We're up to five different pathogens that we know of. I mean, are there other things that they're carrying that they're transmitting and making people ill?
Could be. All right. So they're tiny.
Yes.
Hard to see.
Well, the adult stage ticks that are out there right now, they're relatively easy to see. They're about the size of a sesame seed.
Poppy seed, I think you mean, right?
No, sesame seed.
Okay.
The nymphs that'll be coming out probably mid-May here on the Cape, they are the size of a poppy seed.
They're the poppy seeds, yeah. Okay. And then we have the lone star tick, which is relatively new to our area, right? And they...
The islands have had the lone star tick for some time.
The first report I know of the lone star tick was 1985.
Oh, really?
From Martha's Vineyard.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that long ago.
But I don't think we saw them in numbers until fairly recently. But when I started working 10 years ago, we were shocked to see how many there were. We thought there weren't many.
Now, the vineyard's kind of a hot spot for these lone star ticks, right?
And getting hotter, unfortunately, yeah. Yeah, we can... they're spreading and they're increasing, and the number I find and when I go back to places is increasing exponentially, and they're clearly spreading across the island.
Do we know about Nantucket, how prevalent they are in Nantucket?
I don't. I get different stories from Nantucket. Some people say, oh yeah, we have them, and some people say, no, we don't see a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think they've done the amount of surveillance that we have on the vineyard.
Yeah. And what about the Cape, Larry?
We found them in Sandy Neck Beach Park about 8 years ago, and based on what I saw there, they'd probably been there a few years earlier. But then we have found established population, a good-sized one in West Falmouth along the Shining Sea Bike Trail. And with my contacts with Cape Cod Mosquito Control, they have people out in the field all the time. And they are seeing them in different parts of the Cape now. So they are spreading out. They seem to be very happy here.
Mm. Do we know why they're so much more prevalent on the vineyard? Is it just habitat? Or do we any idea?
My guess is they just got there first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they start off... slowly, a few come in on birds, and eventually you get to the number where the males and females can find each other more easily, and then it just grows slowly, and then at some point there are so many that you go into that exponential growth curve, and that's my fear of where we are on certain locations on the vineyard in Aquinnah, out on Cape Hogue and the Cedars, where they're just exploding, and other places I find a few at a time, but I would go to a yard 2-3 years ago and find 10, and then go back this year or last year and find 50 or 100. And so it's changing rapidly.
Yeah. And we find them in places different than we would see things like deer ticks. So lone stars, you can find them out in open, sunny areas. They seem to be much more tolerant of those conditions than a deer tick that prefers the shade and the leaf litter and lower temperatures, higher humidity.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the deer tick, they're sort of kind of hanging out there waiting for you to come by in the leaf litter usually, right?
Yeah, they're an ambush predator.
Right.
Dinner comes to them.
Right, and they would, a lot of times people think they drop out of the trees because they they climb up you, but that's the sort of their thing. They get on you, usually on your feet, your shoes, somewhere in that area, and then they climb up finding their spot.
Yeah. Exactly. They start low and climb. They don't jump out of trees. In fact, you know, they're blind, mm-hmm. so they can't see their prey. But Lone Star, on the other hand, it's a tick with really good vision mm-hmm. that can chase you.
See you, yeah. But let's keep with the black, mm-hmm. black-legged tick.
The one thing people should be aware of is it's the different life stages of the black-legged tick or the deer tick are in different places. The larvae and the nymphs are down low in the leaf litter. But when you get to the adults, which are out this time of year and all through the winter, you can get Lyme disease, January, mm-hmm. February. They're sort of up at deer height, 18 to 36 inches.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so when you're in the winter, it's not enough just to do your shoes and your socks. They're sort of at knee height. And so mm-hmm. they will get on you if your pants aren't treated
right.
with permethrin or you don't have some kind of repellent on your legs.
All right, so they get on you, climb up, find their spot. Now, going back to the Lone Star tick, where do we find the Lone Star tick? They're not necessarily, as you say, in the leaf litter. Are they predominantly in the sunny areas? Anywhere? I mean, where's their habitat?
We haven't done enough surveillance in different types of habitat. I mean, in the wooded uplands in Sandy Neck, yeah, they were everywhere out there. But Shining Sea Bike Trail, they were out in open grassy strips mm. right next to the path.
What are you finding on the island?
First place we found them was in scrubby cedars and beach grass and things like that out on the beach, surprisingly enough. I also seem to see quite a few under the conifers.
Mm.
I find a lot of Lone Star nymphs in pitch pines, the pitch pine needles, which is scary because so much of the vineyard is pitch pine that's not right. affected by, it's not good habitat for the deer ticks. But I find them in meadows, I find them in grasslands, I find them underneath bittersweet and honeysuckle. They seem to be much more of a generalist to me. I can't,
yeah.
One of the hard things is you can't define Lone Star habitat.
Yeah, that's tough. And the fact that they can see you, I think, is a little bit scary to people. You know, they see you and they can, you know, go, oh, look, right there's my food. I'm going to zip on over there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, and they run with the speed of a spider.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They're fast.
All right. So they are a little bit different in that when the deer tick gets on you, it climbs up, finds the spot it likes. But the Lone Stars, don't they generally bite right away?
My experience is, yeah, they get on you and they bite pretty much wherever they end up. I've gotten, not bitten very much, but because I put my hands on my towel, I'm collecting them. I've been bitten several times on the wrist. They just get on my hands and sneak inside mm-hmm. of the shirt because it's hanging yeah. down, and almost right away they bite
yeah.
as soon as they get.
And Larry, you have a story of a woman who was by the bike path who happened to be there when the little nymphs.
They were Lone Star tick larvae.
Larvae,
So the eggs hatch out late summer, and her daughter had a lemonade stand, and she was with her friend sitting in little plastic chairs. The mom sat down in the grass, and before she knew it, she had 182 ticks attached to her leg.
Ugh. And the doctor called you how to get them out.
Exactly. The doctor said, you know, Larry, these are so tiny. We think they're ticks, but we can't use tweezers. What do you recommend? And I said, well, let's use duct tape.
And that
Oh, it worked like a charm.
Yeah. Mm. All right. So the Lone Star tick, what kinds of health risks are we worried about with the Lone Star tick?
Seems like the most common disease they carry is a type of spotted fever. It's getting reported on the vineyard as Rocky Mountain spotted fever, but I think it's something different. It's rickettsia, but it's a different species of rickettsia, and luckily not nearly as severe as Rocky Mountain spotted fever, which can easily be fatal. They also carry tularemia, low percentage, 3 to 5% probably. But when you get it, it's very, very bad, very scary disease.
The meat allergy one.
And the meat allergy is actually something different. It's not, it's an allergy to their saliva mm-hmm. or something. So it's not any disease organism they carry. It's a similar protein or sugar to something that's in red meat. And so your body makes antigens to that. And then when you go ahead and have a red meat meal, hours later, it can show up in sometimes very severe forms. So we're seeing more and more reports of that on the vineyard. Before, right. It was just one or two anecdotal. Now I'm up to 6-7 reports.
Wow. And then
we've had some cases of the meat allergy here. And of the ticks, the Lone Star ticks that have been tested here, the only pathogen that's been found causes a disease, Starry.
I was just going to say Starry is the other one.
Yeah,
which it's not Lyme disease, but it's a kind of a rash.
Exactly. It's a rash like problem, flu-like symptoms, pretty easy to treat. And I know that we've had cases diagnosed and treated here on the Cape. So that's the only pathogen so far. But
and Starry, Southern Tick-Associated Rash Illness is what Starry stands for. Yeah. And this is the other thing, too, with a lot of these health risks that these ticks carry, flu-like symptoms. Flu-like symptoms could be so many things, right?
Sure.
So it's tough.
That's why it's challenging for the doctors to correctly diagnose these things, because they imitate other conditions.
Mm-hmm. Then we don't have quite yet this Asian longhorn tick, but it's heading our way. Tell us a story about that, Larry.
It's on our doorstep. I mean, this thing was found several years ago on a sheep farm in New Jersey. Then the next year it was found on another sheep farm in New Jersey in another county. And then there were positive detects in Maryland and Virginia, Pennsylvania, then New York, and a couple months ago, Connecticut. So it seems to be moving up the I-95 corridor. So what we believe is happening is this is primarily a pest of livestock. So I think that people that are moving animals between states are probably helping to move this around. So my message to people in our listening audience in NPR Nation is that if you own livestock and have purchased animals from states like New Jersey, you want to take a look at your animals. It's a distinctive tick. It's, rusty reddish brown, no distinctive markings, so it sets it apart from our other ticks. And to be honest, we don't know a whole lot about it.
Mm. At this point, we don't see any health risks to humans at this point with them?
It has not been found to contain any of the pathogens associated with it that you would find in Southeast Asia, which can be pretty severe. The CDC has colonized Asian longhorn, and they're going to expose it to different hosts to see if it, does it have the potential to pick up something like the agent that causes Lyme or babesiosis. So that research is underway.
Mm. Does it harm the animals?
The thing about this that's really unique is that they don't need males to reproduce.
Oh, my goodness.
The parthenogenesis. So the adult females, they just lay eggs, so their populations can build up fast. And they can, small baby, basically baby livestock, they can drain a lot of blood.
Yeah.
So you can find, you can find, thousands of these things on an animal.
Wow, that's scary. I think people are probably thinking, because I grew up in Connecticut, I never saw a tick as a kid growing up. Do we know why? Is it related to temperature changes? Or why we have so many ticks across this region now where we didn't seem to have so many that, 40 years ago?
Changes in the landscape, mm-hmm. really. We couldn't have done a better job of creating deer tick habitat if we wanted to.
Perfect.
Yeah.
First, we let the trees grow back, and then we chopped them up into house lots and made lots of edges, and both the deer and the ticks and the mice all like edges.
Mm.
And so we went out and, by our development patterns, just made deer tick habitat. I grew up on Long Island. I never saw a tick was a dog tick.
Right,
never saw a deer
right.
tick.
Yeah.
And as we've fragmented the forest into small patches, you lose a certain amount of biological diversity. And so we've basically eliminated a very efficient top-tier predator. I mean, we don't have nearly as many foxes as we used to. And as coyotes become more abundant, they will kill fox or drive them out. So we've kind of opened up the landscape for the rodents that are hosting this bacteria.
Mm. I read recently that possum eat like 5,000 ticks in a season. We need more possum.
We absolutely do. That was done research by Rick Ostfeld at the Cary Institute in New York. And possum do not they're not permissive. They don't allow any ticks to feed. So they groom. They don't just detach the ticks, they eat them. Yeah. And must have been a fun project as a graduate student going through possum poop to prove that out. But they calculated that a possum kills 5,300 ticks per week.
Oh, per week. Wow.
Per week.
Wow. All right. How do we attract possum to our yards? That's what we need. 866-999-4626 is our number for your comments or questions this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about ticks and a way to limit our exposure to tick bites. With us this morning is Larry Dapsis, entomologist and tick project coordinator at Cape Cod Cooperative Extension. And Dick Johnson is the Dukes County Tick Program Biologist. 866-999-4626 is our number for your questions or comments. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So we talked about the three major ticks that we have here, the dog tick, the black-legged or deer tick, and the Lone Star tick. What's the life cycle for that? Do they all kind of have the same? They have different life cycles, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk about the Lone Star tick, Dick.
Yeah, the timing's a lot different. The Lone Star tick we don't know as much about, but to my surprise, it seems like the nymphs are coming out a little bit before the deer tick nymphs, which are generally mid-May. They seem to be, even as late as late April, we start seeing the nymphs of the Lone Star. And then they're active through much of the spring and summer. Adults we see a little bit later towards August, September. Mm-hmm. Some in July. The larvae, August and September in particular, which is very scary time for a lot of people because you can pick up hundreds of larvae almost instantly. The deer ticks are very interesting in that the adults can be out all winter. People don't realize that you can get Lyme disease in January, February, March.
It doesn't matter how cold it is either.
It does matter.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, on a warm day. Rule of thumb we use, if you can be out without your gloves for 10 minutes, then the ticks are likely to be active. So I figure 40, 45 degrees, the deer ticks are moving around.
But they're, a lot of people think that they die in the winter when it's cold, but that's not, they're just sort of hanging out there, right? Waiting for it to be warm
enough?
They
are, right, exactly. When we get weather, a couple of times this winter, it was single-digit night temperatures, and people were asking me, Larry, it must have killed the ticks.
Yeah.
And what I tell people is that when I worked in the cranberry industry, I spent 24 years traveling to Wisconsin, where winters 25 below zero is not unusual out there. And in Wisconsin, deer ticks are very healthy, and Wisconsin is quite endemic for Lyme disease. So what they have discovered is that deer ticks synthesize a chemical called glycerol, which is basically antifreeze. Hmm. So these things, they live through the ice age. They've seen it all.
Yeah. Wow. But now the Lone Star ticks, once winter comes, they're not active, or do we know?
I've never seen any Lone Star ticks or had any reports of Lone Star ticks in even late fall through winter. Even one problem we have in monitoring them is that they don't seem to be on the deer during deer hunting season. So even by October, the Lone Star ticks seem to be pretty much gone and won't be back until late April, May at the earliest, maybe not even that soon.
All right. Can they infect us at all stages?
Doesn't look like the larvae of any of the ticks, except for in very rare instances. There seem to be occasionally diseases that can be passed transovarially from the mother to the egg to the larvae, but it's a very, very small percentage. So until they feed, they're not really a danger of spreading disease.
Mm-hmm. So it's so is there a time of year we need to be more aware than the other, or are we vigilant all the time?
Well, I tell people, tick season for deer ticks anyway started January 1st. We'll go to December 31st and start up January 1st. So as Dick said, you can see cases of Lyme disease in January through December. But when that nymph stage tick is out, that poppy seed size thing during the summer months, that's where you see 85% of all cases of Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. So be vigilant year-round, but really be on your game during the summer months.
Well, and, I've talked to many people, mostly on the islands, who have had Lyme disease and babesiosis. I mean, two, three mm-hmm. things at once sometimes, and, mm-hmm. and that can really send you for a wallop.
Sure. Of all the ticks that Cape Cod residents sent to UMass last year, 13% of them were co-infected,
yeah.
packing two, three, sometimes even four pathogens.
Wow. You mentioned UMass, the tick program. Tell us about that. Yes, send a tick to college.
Sure.
This is a great program. If you find a tick, you want to send it to them. And
sure. We received 2 years of funding from Cape Cod Healthcare to subsidize the cost of tick testing. And so instead of $50 for a standard panel test, it's $15, basically the price of a pizza. So you get data that shows what you were potentially exposed to. And so our grants ran out, and people were wondering, okay, Larry, what's going to happen now? Well, to Cape Cod Healthcare's credit, they stepped up to the plate, and they're now funding this directly to the Laboratory of Medical Zoology at UMass Amherst. So, and they've not given any indication that funding is going to run out at any point in time. So for Cape Cod residents, it's a great deal to send a tick to college.
Right. And Dr. Stephen Rich heads up that program and, of course, is gathering all kinds of information that's
yes.
very helpful. But for the person, like I know I found this was 2 years ago, I found a tick on my grandson. And just to be able to send that in and just have the peace of mind to know, okay, that tick didn't carry anything.
Absolutely.
Right?
A number of parents have told me that when they send that tick to college and it comes back negative, wow.
And then if it does come back positive, at least you have something that you can take to your doctor and say, okay, here's what the tick tested positive for, so this is what we want to look for symptoms
Absolutely.
Of, right? Yeah, that's a benefit all the way around. All right, so people thinking, how do I reduce my limit, my exposure to possibly getting bitten? And permethrin is our best friend here, right?
It's the most effective tool in the box.
All right, so tell us about it.
Permethrin is an insecticide that kills ticks. The formulations that are, out there, you apply them to clothing. So pants, socks, and footwear. It'll keep its activity through 6 washings or 42 days, whatever comes first. I tell people treat your footwear once a month. And when I first started working with permethrin 8 years ago, I found that if a tick is on a treated surface for 60 seconds, it's guaranteed to die.
Mm.
And it might take 5 minutes, 10 minutes, a little bit longer, but it is the most effective thing we have. And so overall, it's got a safety margin that's huge. It has very, very low mammalian toxicity, with the exception of kitty cats.
Mm-hmm.
So if you treat your clothing, you want to make sure that clothing is dry before you come in contact with your cats. And it just reminds me to tell people that if you're using a product on your cat, make sure it's not something that's used for a dog.
All right, I want to go back because you said it has a low toxicity for mammals. This is but safe for infants, pregnant
EPA's
women.
EPA's position, permethrin-treated clothing poses no harm to infants, children, pregnant women, and then they extended that to nursing mothers. And there's some other attributes of the product. It has extremely low dermal absorption, unlike some other pesticides like malathion. And whatever small amounts absorbed is metabolized very quickly.
Mm. And so you can spray this, as you said, on your clothing or shoes. You can also buy permethrin-treated, like socks and pants and things like that, right?
Yeah, there's the biggest player in that is Insect Shield down in North Carolina. So you can buy their clothing online. They also market it through other brands like L.L. Bean or Orvis. There's another player that just showed up in Maine, No Fly Zone. And similar technology, and unlike doing it yourself, it has activity through 70 washings, basically the life of the garment. Or the third way you can skin this cat is you can send your clothing to Insect Shield. They'll treat them and send them back to you with the 70 washings claim.
Wow. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. There's also the tick checks. You want to check yourself, you want to check your kids, right?
Yeah, the biggest thing that we give out in terms of literature or education are shower hangers. And we advise everybody to put one in their shower just to remind themselves to check for ticks. Once the ticks are attached, your shower is not going to get rid of them. You know, they can stay attached through the water, but you, as you're soaping yourself up, feeling for any little bumps that weren't there previously, any odd little things, any itches, there's just no substitute, no matter what you do, for doing a thorough tick check of yourselves and your children.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What we've done to supplement that, the shower hanger, that's a pretty good idea. What we have deployed are temporary tick tattoos that the Laboratory of Medical Zoology developed. And they show the actual sizes of the different life stages of the three tick species we have. So it's a great way to teach kids how to do a tick check. We've put them now in display racks in all the libraries on the Cape, all the senior centers, and a number of the garden centers. Mm,
that's a great idea. Now, I know once we get to the warmer months, I actually have very short haircut on his grandson because he has dark hair. And it's really hard to see those little ticks in kids with dark hair.
Yeah, as Dick indicated, your fingertips are better indication, little bumps that you might not see. And using your fingertips, that is probably the best way.
I imagine kids would like that, right? Running your fingers through their hair. All right, so what do you do when you find a tick? There's all these things people say, oh, you can, you know, burn it off, you pull it out with tweezers, but that's all. No, that's not what you do. So tell us how you remove a tick. And is it the same for any type of tick?
I would say it's the same. What I would say is first what not to do. Mm-hmm. Do not put Vaseline on the tick. Right. Do not burn it off. All that does is irritate the tick, and it regurgitates and spits the disease organism into your blood.
Right.
What you want to do is get a pair of, I like really sharp tweezers. Grab the tick as close as you can to the head. Don't squeeze the body if you can help it. Get it as close to the head, which is hard when it's the size of a poppy seed, and pull straight up. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you'll get the whole thing. Sometimes the head remains behind. People worry about that. Not a big deal. It'll work itself out just like a splinter. But
yeah, actually, it's the beak of the tick. Because people will see something, and then it's like 911 cooperative extension. Larry, do I have to go to the ER and get it dug out? Well, the part that's in you is no worse than a wood splinter. So hit it with a little Neosporin, and it's going to dissolve in a couple of days. No need to panic.
Because the Lyme disease and whatever, that's in the stomach, right?
It's in the salivary glands in the tick's head. So if you remove the tick and it's just the beak that left behind, you've removed the part that has the salivary glands. Mm-hmm. So then once you do that, you have evidence. Mm-hmm. You can put that in a baggie, go to tickreport.com, send it out to UMass, and you'll get your tick report in 3 business days or less.
Yeah, they turn it around quickly. And they follow up, too. So I think when I did my tick, we were actually in a hotel in Boston getting ready to fly out in the morning for a vacation. So I was like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do with this thing? I had a Band-Aid in my purse. I put it, stuck what I could of the tick onto the Band-Aid and put it in a plastic bag. And that'll keep, right? I mean, we kept that through our vacation until we got back. So how long? I mean, do you have to send them in immediately? Is there a time frame?
It's the DNA in the tick is very stable. That tick can be dead for 1,000 years, and you can still test it. If you're looking for something like Powassan virus in the tick, that's an RNA virus. So the tick really needs to be analyzed within 3 weeks for them to be able to recover that. But for the other pathogens, that stuff is stable.
I don't think we talked about Powassans, did we? Tell us about Powassans. It's not as common as the other ones.
No,
it's
very rare. We were alerted by DPH several years ago that we've had 14 cases in the state in 4 different counties, including Barnstable County. And of those 14 cases, 3 were fatal. One actually was in Falmouth and the other in Sandwich. So it's something that's very rare. We did surveillance for Powassan several years ago in conjunction with UMass. And we did find Powassan-infected ticks from Falmouth all the way out to Truro at some fairly high infection rates, 10%.
Wow.
So we kind of look at this thing like West Nile virus. A lot of people can be exposed to this virus and be completely asymptomatic.
So tell us about how long the tick has to be feeding to transmit some of these diseases we're talking about.
Well, Powassan is the game changer here. It's 15-minute transmission time. For the other pathogens, at least for deer tick, there's a 24-hour rule of thumb. If it's on you for less than 24 hours, risk of transmission is low. Mm-hmm. It's not zero, but it's low.
Except for Powassan.
Except for Powassan. Mm-hmm. But then after 24 and certainly after 48 hours, transmission risk ramps up fast.
Mm-hmm. And what about the Lone Star?
We don't actually know on the Lone Star. I have not seen any research. Maybe Larry has. But I do want to add one thing that we're really pushing on the Martha's Vineyard, which is if that tick is on for 24 hours, or if you really want to be safe even sooner, get to a physician as soon as you can. Get a couple of doxycycline. There's been a good study in the New England Journal of Medicine showing that taking two doxycycline as a prophylaxis within 24, 48 hours of getting bitten by the tick has reduced the transmission of Lyme disease by 85%. Mm-hmm. So we're really pushing those two doxycycline.
Yeah, and we should say doxycycline, for a while there, they were saying they could not use that on children under the age, I think, of six. But that's changed recently, right?
What it does is it discolors the teeth. Mm-hmm. And I've always been a little puzzled by that because under that age, they're baby teeth anyway, and they're going to come out. So yeah. It's temporary.
Yeah.
Last thing on the doxycycline is there's an awful lot of people on the vineyard who have a small vial of doxycycline in there. It's common enough that they have it in their medicine cabinet.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. It's you'd be surprised how many people just take popping two doxycycline on a pretty regular basis.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. More after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about ticks this morning with Dick Johnson, Dukes County Tick Program Biologist, and Larry Dapsis, Entomologist and Tick Project Coordinator at Cape Cod Cooperative Extension. 866-999-4626 is our number for your comments or questions. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Not surprising, listeners want to know, where do we send these ticks? And we'll put a link up on our website, capeandislands.org, with the program a little bit later for that information. But you can just even Google send a tick to college, right, Larry?
Sure. You'll pull up a lot of newspaper coverage because we've been pushing this program very hard. The website is tickreport.com. Online submission process, easy to navigate. But if you get stuck or have a question, there's a chat button that they monitor like a hawk. They're all about customer service.
They're great.
They are. Now, one of the things that I get a lot of calls on from people is that, Larry, it keeps showing me this $50 test. Mm-hmm. And I tell them that you have to get to the end when it asks for your contact information. So once you put in your zip code, you'll be recognized as getting a subsidy. So it'll show up at the end.
Yeah, so there'll be $15 at the end. $15 well worth it, I must say. You also, Larry, have put together these videos. Like 10-minute little segments. Tell us a little about the videos.
Sure. We received a grant from Cape Cod Healthcare, and I do workshops all the time. I mean, I do over 80 workshops or events per year, so we get in a lot of places, but it doesn't sync up with everybody's schedule. So what I did was take one of my workshops and we cut it up into 10 segments. And so I worked with Cape Cod Community Media Center in Dennis, and so over the course of 6 months I scripted and produced 10 videos of everything you could want to know about ticks. So if you go to capecodextension.org/ticks, you can pull up a playlist. They're 7 to 11 minutes each. So
And Larry, you're entertaining. So it's not only informative, but entertaining as
sure.
well.
Sure. So make some popcorn and sit back and enjoy.
And we'll put a link to the videos on our website with that as well. All right. We have Dr. Bruce, a pediatric dentist, calling in from the vineyard. Good morning.
Good morning, Mindy. I heard a comment that the person you're interviewing said that he doesn't understand why doxycycline should not be given to small children because it only affects baby teeth. That's precisely wrong. The permanent front teeth start forming at birth, and the central incisors, the two front teeth on top and the two front teeth on the bottom, are completely formed by age six. But if you get around to the third tooth, which is very visible when someone smiles, it's not finished forming until age 11. And that's why we don't give tetracyclines, which includes doxycycline, to children. The staining is not on the surface of the tooth. It's in the body of the tooth. It's in the enamel and the dentin as they're forming.
Right.
So I think that needs to be corrected.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much for calling in and giving us that information. That's very helpful. Also, too, one other thing, too, is like with baby teeth, you don't want to lose your baby teeth before you're supposed to either, right? I mean, that can cause all kinds of...
Well, I don't think doxycycline causes the loss of baby teeth at all.
Just the coloring.
It discolors the permanent teeth that are forming. It won't discolor the baby teeth. They're already formed.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah.
It's not on the surface. It's in the body of the substance of the tooth.
So you would really think twice. I mean, there may be instances where that you would give this to a child, or would you never?
Would not.
Okay. All right.
We used to, tetracyclines, those kinds of drugs used to be very, very inexpensive, and so they were used widely in refugee populations. When I was a young dentist, seeing refugees from Cambodia and Vietnam, and the children's teeth were devastated by the wide use of tetracyclines. We don't see that so much anymore because people pretty much know that you shouldn't give them. Amoxicillin is pretty good a substitute in children, is it not?
Yeah, okay. Good to know. Yeah. Thank you for calling.
You bet.
Yep. The problem with amoxicillin is that it works on... I'm not a doctor, so I get a little sketchy here, but what I understand is amoxicillin will work on Lyme disease, but not on some of the other, the anaplasmosis and some of the other diseases that they carry.
Yeah.
The good thing about doxycycline is it deals with everything but the babesiosis and the obviously the tick fever.
Right. All right, so Larry, you also, besides these videos we talked about, you go around and do these workshops. You talk to schools, and you told me an interesting story before we came on the air today about the sort of the surveying of kids when you talk to them, and tell us what you find.
Sure. Most of the school program largely is run through our health and environment department, but I've been invited. Teachers from certain school systems will see my workshop, and they'll say, Larry, could you come into our classrooms? And so I've done a lot of work with the Monomoy school system in Chatham, so 5th year, 6th years, and 7th years. Well, last year is the first time I did this, and so I was asked to come back this year. And for the 6 years, insect evolution, because they had already had the Larry tick stuff. So having had them now in my classroom again, it was great opportunity for me to ask some questions about what they learned and put into practice. So this was about 100 students, and I asked them, I said, okay, how many of you are doing tick checks when you come in the house? And basically all the kids are doing tick checks, which great news.
That's great, yeah.
I asked them how many of them were putting their clothes in the dryer for 20 minutes like we talked about. And I'd say about a third of the kids were doing that. So a good chance to remind them. And I sent information home with them to give to their parents about using permethrin to treat clothing and footwear. So I asked them, I said, how many of your parents have been treating your clothing and footwear with that special repellent permethrin? Nobody.
Wow.
So I've got to figure out a way to close that gap communication-wise, because I think the parents really have to revisit this. Because if you look at the statistics, kids age 5 to 9 have the highest incidence rate of Lyme in the state. So the soccer moms and the soccer dads, we really have to drill into them the importance of proper protection for their kids.
Yeah. Do you find your education programs, I mean, is it tough to get, I mean, you're talking about your parents maybe not knowing this, and I didn't realize that permethrin was so safe until I talked to you this morning. So it's just, we just aren't getting the information, or what?
It's something I'm trying to figure out. It's like we are working, for example, with the Camp Burgess and Hayward, YMCA camps, and to basically help educate or get information to the parents so when the kids come to camp, they're going to be protected. Mm-hmm. So my messaging to parents, it's been difficult because, as you know, people here on Cape Cod are very chemophobic, okay? And it's hard to basically guide people through what is really a psychological barrier and not a toxicology problem, mm-hmm. as there's the exposure risk is extremely low. There's no reason to not use these products.
Okay. David's calling from Wellfleet. Hi, David. David, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, David.
I am one of those people that spend a lot of time outside and come across ticks. And I found something that works well for removing them. I had been using rubbing alcohol and tea tree oil. And my doctor asked me one day, you know, what I was using to remove them. And I told him that. And I actually did an experiment eventually where I took a live tick off me and put it like in a bottle cap and poured some tea tree oil in it. And within minutes, it had killed it.
Hmm. Thoughts on that?
So,
yeah.
Pardon?
Sure. I mean, killing the tick, what I don't know is if that oil would interfere with the analysis for the pathogens in the tick. So basically, I still maintain that pointy tweezers and prompt removal is the best course of action.
Yeah, especially if you're going to send it in, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Which we would encourage people to do because, again, that's giving us information that helps us all in the end. David, thank you. Thank you for that call. Go ahead. You want to say something?
To go back to what Larry was just saying, we have obviously the same issue on the vineyard where people are just nervous about permethrin because it is synthesized in a factory. The Center for Disease Control website has a list of other types of repellents and tick killers that you can use that are supposedly somewhat more natural, and it's mm-hmm. worth taking a look at that. If you absolutely refuse to use the permethrin, there's another one made from a wild tomato plant that seems to be in the first preliminary studies just about as effective, and there are some other that have at least been tested. Rather than go out with something that anecdotally you've heard may keep the ticks away, mm-hmm. at least go to the CDC and see what they recommend as alternatives to DEET.
All right, Catherine writes, I'm an avid gardener. I wear treated protective clothing when I garden. I have a large compost pile located in my wooded area. It is finally mature enough to be dug. Is the risk of ticks high enough that I should buy bagged compost and give up the compost pile? Also, is having the yard sprayed by a professional worth doing? That's a good question.
As a 1-2 punch, at least here on Cape Cod, for what I recommend, the permethrin treated clothing and footwear, you have to do that. To further reduce exposure risk, perimeter yard spray that you can do yourself. You can go to any garden center and get a product, a hose end sprayer, Bonide 8, which contains permethrin. You could contract with companies, and you want to ask some questions, like where are they going to treat? We certainly don't want them treating the entire lawn.
You're going to kill other things.
Well, you're not hitting the ticks. The ticks aren't out in the middle of an open lawn. It's just an environment that can't survive in. So you're treating the edges where the ticks might be in leaf litter
Would doing that also kill like pollinators or other good insects?
It's a good question. In my experience, I don't see bees foraging in leaf litter. Mm-hmm. So we're keeping the sprays pretty much apart. Is there collateral damage to the things that live in leaf litter like springtails? Short term, mm-hmm. those things recolonize areas very, very quickly. So I think that the perimeter yard sprays, and you have to be aware that there are different product offerings. So what we recommend is products that contain bifenthrin that mm-hmm. a professional would use. There are all natural solutions that are being offered, like IC3, which is basically rosemary oil. And the research at University of Rhode Island pretty much has demonstrated that none of these botanicals are worth the money. Mm. They just don't get the job done.
All right.
The one thing I would add to that as far as limiting the collateral damage, a lot of times when people come in to do the sprayers come in, I see them also spraying for mosquitoes, which means they're spraying up in the air and in the trees. And yes, you are going to endanger a lot more pollinators. If you ask them just to do the ticks, just to do the perimeter yard spray, not to spray up in the air, be careful around flower beds, I think you can really limit the number of other things that are killed.
And that's going to be the...
People shouldn't be spraying for mosquitoes anyway.
Right.
It's basically managing standing water. That's the trick. Mm-hmm. It's spraying for mosquitoes is a useless product.
And even just without spraying, just cleaning up your leaf litter would do a lot, right?
Mm-hmm. That's my biggest thing. I was just writing a letter to the newspapers. Right now, before May gets here, people need to get the dead leaves, the leaf litter, and the pine needles out of the yard, off the edges of the yard. I don't mean, you know, if there's a few leaves lying around, that's fine. But if you've got an inch or two or three of accumulated leaves, that's going to provide the humidity and the safe space that the nymphal deer ticks need. And that's where we find them. And now is the time to get rid of it. If you wait until May, and the ticks are there, you're just setting yourself up.
Yeah. All right. So I know both of you get phone calls from tourists, people visiting who are like, uh-oh. I hear about these ticks, and you know, what are my chances? And what do you tell tourists when they ask you about visiting here?
First thing I tell them is it's very possible to come here, enjoy the outdoors, enjoy all the beautiful spots the Cape Ann Islands have to offer. You just have to be mindful and smart. You can be aware of the tick habitat. You can wear the permethrin treated clothing, and you'll really lower your risk. I spend the whole tick season out looking for ticks in the best tick habitat I can find, and I don't get bitten by ticks because I wear permethrin-treated socks, permethrin-treated, I spray my pants, and I spray long and wear long-sleeve shirts. And I had two internships last year, and neither one of them was bitten by a tick, and they were the same thing. We handle thousands of ticks a year, so it's perfectly possible to do it if you're smart and mindful and paying attention.
Mm-hmm. My first call from a potential tourist was shortly after I was hired. And so we're talking about the situation here. Then I asked them where they're from, and she said Connecticut. And I said, you would notice a difference, plus we have better beaches. but I do get calls from potential tourists in like Quebec and other places where, you know, Lyme disease is not that prevalent. So I walk them through the basics, you know, go to our website. There are resources. Now that we have the video series, mm-hmm. that makes it easy for them to prepare themselves. And I tell them that you just have to be mindful. It's what I tell people is that don't fear your environment. Understand your environment.
Mm, that's good advice. And then we just have about a minute left, and I just want to say, thinking back to what our conversation and what we don't know about the Lone Star tick and Dick, the explosion of the population in the vineyard, this is something, an area we really need to be looking at, right?
Yeah, we don't really even know how they're moving around. We know that the young come on birds, but how they're moving around on the vineyard. I've heard in parts of the Midwest they call them the turkey tick. Mm-hmm. What role are the turkeys playing? What habitats are they in? How are they getting around? We all know almost nothing. How long did they have to be attached to transmit the diseases? Where we were with, say, Lyme disease 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Do we have people looking into this? I mean, is there research going on?
Not that I'm so much aware of, no. Yeah. They're being really not paid attention to.
Well, let's hopefully somebody will pick that up. Dick Johnson, Dukes County Tick Program Biologist, and Larry Dapsis, Entomologist and Tick Project Coordinator at Cape Cod Cooperative Extension. Thank you both. And we will have links on our website to where you can send the tick and Larry's videos at capeandislands.org. Thank you both for being here this morning. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mindy.
Thank you, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.